You're listening to Truth To You with Jono. Hani has joined me in the studio. Say g'day.
G'day.
And g'day wherever you may be around the world. It is good to have your company. It is time for Culture Pearls with the Cultured Karaite. G'day, Deborah.
Howdy, y'all. How are y'all doing?
Doing very well. Wonderful to have you back in the program. What are we talking about today?
Fermentation.
Strangely enough. Surely not.
I know. I just can't help it. Fermentation is just my thing, and I see it everywhere. I've tried to find it everywhere, and I just can't help it. But interestingly enough, in the last couple of weeks on the internet, if you keep up with those kinds of things, some of these wonderful blog sites of ladies that they're into the natural food and fermenting and everything, there arose a very large brouhaha over some information that one of the ladies posted.
Really?
About, yes.
Ooh,
it was
controversy, Deb. Do tell.
It was. It really did turn into really big controversy. And she was actually quite shocked about it. But it's interesting because people started weighing in on it. And the premise of the point of the controversy was that she brought up the concern of, is our fermentation proper, safe? Are we doing it in a way that's really giving us the best benefit of the fermentation? And that all has to do with most of it with the vessel that you ferment in. And first of all, I have to say this lady is extremely intelligent. She gave wonderful good facts. She did her homework. Nothing, I didn't think anything she said, was wrong or anything. As a matter of fact, everything I thought she said, was correct. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that bothered me about the whole big mess, because this went on for a couple of weeks, and actually there's still some things being posted, recently about it. And the only thing that bothered me, not that she was wrong in any way, because she was not. She's extremely smart, and she would be a great go-to person to learn from. But it just bothered me that some people who are sitting out there who are just getting ready to ferment something said, ugh, I don't want to do this now because I'm scared, or I don't have this equipment, or I don't have this, or I don't have that. And I would just absolutely, it would just crush me if somebody didn't begin to ferment because of fears. So I really want to go through some of the things with fermentation, the good and the bad, and really just put those fears to bed and just kind of, let's, I know Hani is right with me on this, to think through.
Now, she just, when you mentioned this, Deb, she seemed to have a knowing look on her face. Do you know what's going on?
I've read about it a little bit. I didn't go into too much detail on it because I thought Deb will. So she'll explain the whole thing to me. But from what I can gather, it's to do with are our mason jars that we're using really airtight?
So, sorry, what's a mason jar?
The jars that I use that clip on.
Okay, so, oh, with the rubber seal.
Yes, with the rubber seal.
Are they good or bad? Right, okay.
How airtight? Because the oxygen, you don't want oxygen in your ferment, and that's true. That is true. But
the oxygen will allow, it might allow undesirable bacteria in, that sort of thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's where you can get, mold and some other things that you don't want. But I think that one of the places to start, at least for me, is, first of all, I have to tell you, and we'll get back into this more, but I know Hani knows who this is. Sandor Katz has just come out with a new book called The Art of Fermentation. And my beautiful, wonderful, sweet, generous friend, Robin, sent it to me, pre-ordered it, and had it sent to me. And I cried. Hi, Robin.
G'day, Robin. Thanks, Hi, Robin.
This is 500 pages of information. This is
Deb, is this the fermenting Bible?
It is. It is.
Oh, look out.
It is. Oh, my gosh. Now, I tell you what, Sandor Katz has dedicated over 20 years of his life to fermentation. He, for some reason, just like with me, I can't explain it, he adores it. And so, but But he set about to learn every single thing he could learn from all over the world. And that's what impresses me, is this man has traveled all over the world to every kind of imaginable culture that you can think of to understand, you know, what they understood about fermentation. So they call him, as a matter of fact, Sally Fallon has dubbed him the Fermentation King. Yeah. And he really knows his stuff. And this new book, you may not be into fermentation like I am, but I tell you what, it's worth your money and your time, even though it's a very large book.
So what's it called again?
The Art of Fermentation by Sandor.
The Art of Fermentation by Sandor Katz. All right, I'll add that to the sidebar, the Amazon sidebar of the website, so people can click on that.
Yes.
And, okay, so it's the Fermentation Bible by the Fermentation King. Mm-hmm. And what's in there, Deb? What are the goodies that you've found so far?
Oh, my goodness. There's just so much stuff that, you know, he brings this out. And I think that the way we are, the way we all, you know, think and believe in the ancient path and in the way Jehovah, you know, allowed this bacteria to be everywhere. We've talked about that. That's still just, you know, that's something I think about almost every day, that he put it here free. But what kind of jars would Joshua's wife have fermented in when they got into the land?
That's a good question.
That's a good question.
Well, it would have been, I assume, a clay jar of some description.
Well, I know that if they were using kefir just for the milk, it would have been animal skins.
Right.
Really?
That's exactly right. It would have been an animal skin pouch. And actually, I found a picture on the internet of a very large one in Nazareth that they uncovered. Of course, it's very dry now, but it was very, very large. But you're right. They would have fermented vegetables in clay jars. And is clay airtight?
I don't know. I was just thinking, if they were going to make it airtight, they'd have to use some kind of a wax or something. I don't know. Deb, how would they have done it? I've never really... Mm. We need an archaeologist. Honey, come on.
I'm not an archaeologist.
Come on, what do you mean? You're about to go to Israel and do an archaeological dig. You're studying ancient history. What's going on? What did they used to do?
I spoke to an archaeologist.
It's your time to shine. Come on.
Let me get back to you.
Okay.
go over there and then get back to this. I did speak with an archaeologist. A lot of people, I don't think, realize that Nehemiah Gordon has a degree in archaeology.
He does indeed.
He does. And so I asked him about it, and he said that they would have fermented in clay jars, and that these, and I, you know, because I mentioned to him, he took me to a place one time that had these holes down in the rock, and he said that's where they kept jars. And of course, now that I'm into fermentation, I was like, well, of course they would have kept these jars in the ground in this rock because it's cooler, and mm-hmm. because yeah. you want to slow down the fermentation process at some point. But he said, well, maybe, he said, but chances are they would have kept them in caves. The caves would have been even cooler than keeping them, you know, just down in the rock. Mm-hmm. And he said they would have been clay jars. And he said, here's what's interesting about that, is that the clay jars would have seeped the liquid to the outside a little bit, and that would have kept the jar even cooler. That the liquid would have come out, you know, on the sides and kind of seeped out a little bit. And that would have kept the jars even cooler. I was so astounded by that. But I think that, you know, the biggest thing is we have to realize that these vessels were not airtight.
Well, that's right.
So, did he have anything to, did Nehemiah have anything to offer in regards to how they would have been sealed? Was there any type of sealing? I mean,
they would have had lids, but he, you know, as far as like absolutely sealing them, no, he actually didn't think that they did, that they just would have had this lid. But this is what's interesting about fermentation that Hani and I, you know, discovered by are actually just doing, is that if you keep the vegetable under the water, then you keep it in this what they call anaerobic or without oxygen environment. Sandor Katz refers to it as the brine because it's got salt in it. So you would keep the vegetable, you know, under the water. Whether, and I use rocks. I use
right, because you, I've seen you do this, Deb. You, yeah. You put pebbles on top to weigh them down to make sure that they don't come up above the surface to ensure that they remain in the liquid, in the fermentation liquid.
I don't know if this is the right thing, but I actually use a cabbage leaf. I actually just take a whole cabbage leaf and fold it up and just put it in on top. And that just pushes everything down, and then put the lid on as well.
Yeah, that's
and
what
then I actually throw that cabbage leaf out afterwards.
Give it to the chooks.
Yeah. I do too. Yeah, the chick. But I use the cabbage leaf, or actually even, you know, you can use the plug from after you cut your cabbage. That's the core.
Oh yes, of course. Yeah,
the core. You could push the core down there and push it. You know, push it down. But that's what I use, the cabbage leaf, and then put my rocks on top of that to make sure that it all stays under there. So you know, I want to say right here that there is a fermentation equipment called a pickleit. And this pickleit is basically one of the jars that has the wire around it that you push down to seal the lid on. But it has a gizmo on the top that allows the oxygen to come out. And the only thing then left in the jar is the CO2, the carbon dioxide, which the fermentation process gives off. And that, you know, that will come out, you know, as well. But then, you know, you're assured that there's no oxygen left in that jar. Those are awesome jars. Well, they're very expensive.
Yeah.
And I'll just be real honest here. I can't afford them. I'm hoping at some point to get one so that I can try it and, you know, see for myself, you know, how it does. But I've been fermenting in mason jars, and I think there are some hints and tips that we can give and explain, you know, to everybody out there, what to look for that's bad, and what are some of the things you can do to avoid that if you absolutely, you know, can't afford, you know, these other things. But I sure don't want anybody to not do this because they think they have to have some kind of special equipment or
special expensive equipment. Just curiously, how expensive are these pickleit jars?
I priced, I prefer a larger jar, so I priced a liter and a half jar that actually had all of the parts to it included, and it was $28.
Mm. Oh, wow.
For one jar.
Okay, and they're glass, right?
Mm. Yes.
They look just like the jars that we use, except they have this little attachment on the top that actually takes the oxygen out. It's a good option, but it's obviously not the only option. And what I think what Deb is trying to say is that the way that we've been fermenting is safe.
Well, we've been doing it for a while. A couple of years, Deb, you've been doing it for a long time, and we don't have a problem. Now, it also reminds me, Dev, you said every now and then it's not uncommon that a culture may appear on top of the water, and you said simply just scoop it off.
That's what I do, and that's what Sandor Katz recommends. Now, I do want to say this, that this lady, like I said, she really knows her stuff, and she explained that when mold, if it is, you know, a mold that grows on top of the culture, that the threads or the roots or the threads of the mold go down into, you know, the vegetable. So you might want to, you know, scoop off more, you know, than the top layer. Or if you get mold, you might not want to eat it at all. And that's a personal preference. That's only happened to me like twice that I can remember. And I skimmed off quite a bit of it and threw that away. And felt I didn't have any kind of reaction, you know, bad or anything from eating the vegetable.
I can say the same thing, Jeff, because it happened to one of my chili ferments. Not the burning hot lava chili that's still in the fridge at the moment. Mind you, I did use the kvass of that chili ferment as Tabasco in a soup, and that was just brilliant. That was really, really nice. But I have had medium hot chili ferments where it developed
a white mold
culture on top. And so I thought, all right, so Deb says scoop it off, so I'll scoop it off. So we scooped it off and
still alive.
And it was gone, and I live to this day. And I had no adverse reaction to that, and it wasn't a problem for me. So
to be honest, the white film, that white is perfectly normal. That's perfectly safe.
What colors are when we say mold then, what colors are we wary of?
like gray, you know, gray or green, you know, or dark. And some you want to scoop, you know, you want to be sure you scoop that off. That wouldn't be good. That would be a mold that, you know, actually looks like, you know, what we know is like a green mold that grows on vegetables. So that does mean that there was, you know, too much oxygen allowed in. Right. But you can get what's called oxidation on the top layer of your vegetables where they turn a little bit brown. That would be harder to see in red cabbage, but I think you could still tell the difference in that and the rest of your cabbage below. Mm-hmm. And that's not good because that means it oxidized. It had so much oxygen get to it that it oxidized. And so that's not a good thing. And also in that situation, you've lost some vitamin C. This is probably a little known fact, but I think it's fascinating. You know, everybody gives... And I'm probably going to not remember his name exactly. Captain James Cook. Who?
Hey, Captain Cook.
He's our founding father.
Well, he's kind of... he did come round to... He's the one that came into Botany Bay. And
he claimed Australia for Britain, basically.
Oh, yeah. That's what happened. Yeah. Well, he ended up being eaten in New Zealand.
But you see, but what you're about to say is that every school... Yes, he did. Every school child... in Australia knows this, that he had barrels of sauerkraut on his ship because his crew never got scurvy.
Exactly. Because it's full of vitamin C. Right. But once you get that oxidation, then you start to lose the vitamin C in the vegetables. So that's not a good situation. And slime, you know, if something feels or looks slimy and has like a slime on it, that's real bad. Mm. Or if something turns pink. That means a yeast has started to grow. That's not good. If it's pink or reddish looking, but mostly it would be pink. And that would be really hard to see on red cabbage, but that's not good. That's a yeast. But actually the white film or the white foam on top, that's perfectly safe. There's no harm in that.
Whatsoever. That's why I still live because that's what it was. And I scooped it off and it was fine and the chili was delicious. Oh, by the way, I finally got my fermented garlic to turn blue again.
All right.
It's a really nice blue and I've been eating it now for a week and it's delicious.
It's almost empty.
Tastes exactly. Yeah, I've only got a few left. But it took a while, actually. It took a while this time for it to turn blue. But it did turn blue and it's absolutely fine. I'm not dead. So just to report back on that experiment.
That's so, wonderful. Also, one of the biggest things too, and I probably should have said this first. Your very first hint that something's wrong is when you get through fermenting something, and you open it, and it smells extremely foul. I mean, extremely foul to where it makes you want to hurl. That whole ferment has gone wrong.
Right. So if it smells like you don't want to eat it, don't eat it.
Don't eat it. Throw that out. Now, I have to say, I am so fortunate. I honestly have not had any of this happen except for mold on one ferment, and I'm very thankful. But I understood from the beginning to keep everything under the water, under the salted water.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I've never had a problem as long as it's under the water. Uh-huh. It's been fine.
Well, I think there's a couple of things that we can do. The mason jars that I use and that we use here actually have metal two-part lids. They have a metal lid, and on the inside there's a little rubber band going around it, and then there's a metal band that you screw on, you know, to screw the whole thing down, and that's what I use. And one of the things that I do and I think is you know, inexpensive compared to some of the other options is I don't use those lids all, you know, continually. I throw them away and use new lids because that rubber seal on the inside is important. And once your vegetable starts to ferment and makes all the CO2, you have to, you know, unloosen the band and let the pressure off. And it's making so much carbon dioxide that it's going to replace anything in there and push it out. It's going to replace, you know, it's going to push out oxygen and everything. So for the first couple of days of a ferment, maybe first 3 days, I unscrew that and let that pressure off because, you know, I've had many people email me and say, Deb, my, my Furmin exploded on me.
Whoa.
Oh, wow.
So don't fill your jar too full, because it is going to expand, and let your lid off, you know, for the first
couple. Hang on. So, Dev, have you ever had, so we're talking about the mason jars. Have you ever had one explode, or is it just out of the lid? What's going on?
I fermented black beans. I cooked some black beans and then, you know, let them cool off, and then I made a paste out of them, just pureed them, and, you know, packed them in a jar with some whey and some salt, and I filled it too full, because these babies got full of CO2 and they were really expanding, and I went to loosen the lid, and I mean, I had beans everywhere. It was a mess, but it was delicious. It was a mess. It really, I mean, it that stuff will shoot. It'll shoot way out.
So it's not a matter of the glass breaking or shattering. It's not a matter of the lid, popping off. It's just when you loosen it, because there's so much pressure in there, like you might, shake a soda can and then open it. Is it kind of like that?
Yes. But it comes out with some pressure, though. It really does. So.
Wow.
But because I know Sally Fallon doesn't suggest this. She just suggests put the lid on tight and leave it for 3 days.
Yeah, but Sandor Katz, boy, he's real big on reminding you over and over and over to let that pressure off every day.
Right. So I've actually got some what is it? Tomato sauce fermenting at the moment.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, it looks full. When you open that, you got to do it outside.
Well, Ellie did it yesterday, so I might just undo the lid and
get over the kitchen sink.
With a tea towel over it.
Well, it wasn't completely full. It had maybe half an inch.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but I replaced those lids. I mean, they're very inexpensive for it's just a couple of dollars for a box of, I don't know, a dozen, I think. And compared to, you know, replacing, you know, all of my equipment, which I'm certainly not going to do. I do hope to add to my equipment, but I'm not going to replace it, because I haven't had any issues. And I think that if we think back over how people fermented for at least 3,000 years, you know, or 4,000 years before I started fermenting, they didn't have, you know, as good equipment as I have, but they kept the vegetable, you know, down under
ferment water. So now Honey uses we just collect the larger jars, right, that we use, just supermarket jars, wash them out and use those.
I don't use them for everything. I mostly use the mason jars.
You mostly use the mason jars. But Dev, I mean, is the rubber seal replaceable? Because Dev, is that what you're talking about, replacing the entire lid? Or is the rubber seal replaceable?
Yeah, the rubber seal's replaceable. And at least in the jars, the kind of lids that I'm talking about that are a metal band and a metal lid.
Is that like a canny?
Yes. Right. It's like a
Yes.
Right. But there's that little rubber, you know, band underneath it, and they actually will seal. You know, they'll let the CO2 out, but they'll fit very tightly once your ferment is done. And again, like I said, I've kept things in the refrigerator for quite a while, and without any issues of oxygen getting, you know, into the jar. Of course, we open it and all that, but a ferment is continually making CO2, just not at the same rate that it does in the first, say, 2 or 3 days, depending on your temperature. So, but I'd like to read something out of Sandor Katz's book. I would love to sit here and read the whole book to you.
Go on, 500 pages.
I think there could be a copyright issue.
Everyone,
there.
Go and get a cup of tea.
But I want people, there's just two passages in here that I'd like to read, because I really want to encourage and don't want anybody to be discouraged in the slightest to try fermentation. And I do suggest trying to ferment sauerkraut first. It's delicious. It's easy. It's foolproof. I've got a video
on it. So good for you.
It is. It's delicious. But let me just...
I was just going to say, you can even drink the juice, like drink the cabbage juice
cabbage kvass.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah, it is wonderful.
And sorry, Dip, you said you've got a video on it. Just remind everybody of your website and where they can find those videos.
It's culturedkaraite.blogspot.com, and I go through and make sauerkraut on there and show you how to pack it in the jar real tight. And I use a mason jar with the can, you know, the canning jar tied. Mm-hmm. So, and that's, my caraway sauerkraut turned out so good.
Nice.
I suggest that. But anyway, let me just, you know, help you to feel, help everybody out there to feel very comfortable and very safe about doing this.
Yes.
He says, sometimes people are afraid to try fermentation for fear of accidentally getting the wrong bacteria growing and potentially sickening or even killing themselves and others. At least in the realm of raw plant materials, this fear is completely unfounded. As far as I know, there has never been, now this is a quote from Fred Bright. As far as I know, there has never been a documented case of foodborne illness from fermented vegetables, states Fred Bright, a microbiologist for the U.S. Department of Agriculture who specializes in vegetable fermentation. He goes on to say, risky is not a word I would use to describe vegetable fermentation. It is one of the oldest and safest technologies we have. A critical aspect of the action of lactic acid bacteria is its self-protection. And let me explain real quick. Lactic acid bacteria is literally what we call probiotic. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of different bacteria in concert, and they label them all as lactic acid bacteria. It is the lactic acid bacteria they produce is effective in inhibiting the growth of other bacteria that may decompose or spoil the food, according to the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization report entitled Fermented Fruits and Vegetables, A Global Perspective. This is why lactic acid fermentation is such an effective strategy for food preservation and safety. Mm-hmm. Now, people all over the world right now ferment. There are tribes in Africa that ferment, and I doubt that they have as nice of equipment as I do. They might. And also, just to throw this in, he goes on to say that Sandor Cass does, in light of recent outbreaks of foodborne illnesses traced to spinach, lettuce, tomatoes, and other raw vegetables, I think it would be fair to say that fermented vegetables are safer than raw vegetables. For even given some freak incident of contamination, the incidental pathogenic bacteria could never compete with the native lactic acid bacteria populations, and the acidification that rapidly develops in fermenting vegetables would destroy any surviving pathogens. Lactic acid bacteria offer a strategy for safety and preservation that is present in all vegetation.
So can I stop you there and interrupt you, Dev? That yes. Reminds me of in Europe, particularly coming out of Egypt and Spain and affecting people, I think, in France and Germany. Was it early in the year or last year? There was, might have been last year, an E. coli infection in, I think, cucumbers and seeds, various vegetables anyhow. And there were, I think there might have been some deaths involved. And they had to isolate certain imports from certain countries. With E. coli poisoning in vegetables, would fermentation take care of that problem?
Yes, from what I've been, what my research has shown, that fermentation or the lactic acid bacteria kills E. coli, Salmonella, and H. pylori.
Wow. And so that's the reason why he says that fermented vegetables, it can be said that they're even safer than raw vegetables, right?
Right, exactly.
Okay. All right.
And I think, you know, that we just have to realize people have been doing this for literally almost 6,000 years. We're, mm-hmm. you know, this is, we're not new to this. We're coming in on the end of it. Mm-hmm. Now we may, you know, maybe Joshua's wife didn't know that it was lactic acid bacteria that she was, you know, creating. And we know now because of science, but still, this is something that's been done and, you know, and handed down. And actually this is, and I think Sandor Katz is probably, you know, one of the main ones, and Sally Fallon, for reviving this situation of culturing vegetables.
I've actually been seeing lately around the net, people have been talking about fermented food as the missing food group.
Yes, I believe that.
Which is, that's a good way to put it, isn't it? Yeah. Mm.
That's wonderful. You know, I was listening to Torah Pearls when y'all were talking about this, you know, letting the land go fallow on on the Sabbath year. And I thought, you know, gee, can you imagine all of the wonderful fermented things they did in the sixth year? Yeah. Oh my goodness.
That's a really good point. That's an excellent point. That's right. Because they had, three times the amount of harvest. They had to store it somehow, and it lasted for that long. So that would make a lot of sense.
Oh, that was the main reason, you know, for fermentation was preservation of food. And
so really our generation over the last few, since refrigeration really, we've just gotten way out of whack with this.
We have? Way off the ancient path.
And it's the forgotten food group. That's right. We need to get back in the ancient path. Did I interrupt your quote? Was there more to that?
No. That was all I wanted to. I mean, I just want to say this one thing, because this just underlines, you know, what we already talked about. He says that there's an underlying unity to all vegetable fermentation. By keeping vegetables submerged under liquid, you create a selective environment where molds and other oxygen-dependent organisms cannot grow, thereby encouraging acidifying bacteria. Beyond this simple technique, and all the particulars of what, where, when, and how approaches to vegetable fermentation can be quite varied and quirky. And Hani and I have discovered that, even just in the milk kefir, it makes different, I won't say every batch, but, you know, all of a sudden there'll be a batch that's runny. It's not thick. Yeah. And I've left it the same, you know, 24, 48 hours, whatever I'm leaving it, and it just doesn't get thick. And I think we have to recognize that these things are alive. These are living organisms. Intelligent design. Somebody designed these things. And they're just like us. Every day, I don't have a good day every single day. Almost, but not every single day. So these little cultures have, you know, times that they're different, you know, from others.
They're also responding to the environment they're in. It depends on the temperature of the room or
the humidity and so on and so forth. That's right.
It's so true. And I've watched them and I've learned so much from them that they're not going to just be like little, you know, 10 soldiers, every one of them alike. That's not the way it works. And that's an amazing education.
Yeah.
Excellent.
It is a wonderful thing.
It is. So once again, the book that you are recommending, Deb, is Art of Fermentation by Sandor Katz. There is a link on the right-hand side of the website, truth2u.org, truth2u.org. Was there anything else, Deb, that you wanted to leave with us today?
Oh, just the biggest thing is please don't be afraid to ferment. Please, please. It is the best thing you can do for your family. It is the healthiest thing you can do. You get all of the benefits of raw food plus. Vitamins are increased. Which is amazing. You can take something, you know, that has good vitamins in it, and fermentation process will actually increase the vitamin content.
Amen. Amen. And it doesn't have to be an expensive exercise. And thank you for reassuring everybody out there as we encourage them to get into fermenting. And Deb, we look forward to speaking with you again very soon. Thank you for coming back onto Truth to You. And it is Cultured Karaite, for the listeners, culturedkaraite.blogspot.com. culturedkaraite.blogspot.com is the website. Also, you can find Cultured Karaite on Facebook. There's a page there. You can go there, like it, interact with the information there. And there is a plethora of information on both of those sites. Deb, thank you very much. And until next time, dear listeners, be blessed and be set apart by the truth of our Father's word. Shalom.